This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost joins us for the latest from Sullivan County government. He's the communications director, joins us every Friday. Did you know that Liberty is the home to Sullivan County's first and only all-girl scout troop? No, not the Girl Scouts. Historically all boys, Troop 1095 was founded more than 100 years ago. The Boy Scouts of America officially transitioned to Scouts BSA in 2019, opening the door to girls. Today, Radio Catskill's Laying Tang speaks to Troop 1095 about the challenges they've overcome and the invaluable skills they've gained along the way. And whether you're a painter, sculptor, writer, or any other creator, repetitive motions can strain both your body and your mind. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaks with fiber artist and certified yoga teacher Liza Laird about a special chair yoga class for artists. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Syria says Israel launched airstrikes in Aleppo province overnight, killing civilians and soldiers. NPR's Jane Araf reports from Beirut.
The Syrian Defense Ministry said the Israeli airstrikes targeted southeast Aleppo province, killing an undisclosed number of civilians and military personnel. It said Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups also launched drone attacks inside and outside Aleppo city. Hezbollah, the Iran-backed Lebanese armed group, which also operates in Syria, today named several of its fighters killed in battle, but did not specify where. Israel said one of the dead was the deputy commander of Hezbollah's rocket and missile unit, killed by an Israeli airstrike in South Lebanon. Israel and Hezbollah have been fighting across the Israeli-Lebanese border since the war in Gaza began. Jane Araf, NPR News, Beirut.
The International Court of Justice has ordered Israel to make sure food reaches Palestinians immediately in Gaza. Many there are starving. The court's order is not enforceable. The ruling comes as part of South Africa's claim against Israel that it is committing genocide against Palestinians. Israel rejects that and says it's fighting genocide against its own citizens. The Coast Guard is bringing in some of the biggest cranes on the East Coast to help clear damage from the collapsed Baltimore Bridge. The debris has shut down access to the port of Baltimore. NPR's Joel Rose reports authorities still need to decide how to proceed.
U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Shannon Gilreath says they're still trying to figure out the best way to use those cranes.
Before we can actually engage in lifting, we've got to complete the assessment process of the bridge and the pieces of the bridge are in the water so that we can figure out how to cut the bridge into the right size pieces so that we can actually lift them with the crane.
But even completing that assessment will be difficult. Divers have to work carefully and methodically because the water is so dark and the debris is so dense that they can only see a few feet in front of them.
NPR's Joel Rose reporting. The stock market is closed today for the Good Friday holiday. NPR's Scott Horsley reports investors will have more time to digest new spending and inflation numbers from the Commerce Department.
Personal spending jumped by a whopping 0.8% in February. People are still spending freely on both goods and services, even as personal incomes rose just 0.3%. With the growth in spending outpacing income, the personal savings rate fell to a low 3.6%. According to the Commerce Department's inflation yardstick, which is closely watched by the Federal Reserve, prices in February were up 2.5% from a year ago, 2.8% if you don't count food and energy. While inflation has fallen from its four-decade highs, prices are still climbing faster than the central bank would like. That's why the Fed's taking a wait-and-see approach before it starts cutting interest rates. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. Today is the first anniversary of Russia's detention of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. Russia accuses him of spying, a charge he and the U.S. deny. The U.S. says Gershkovich is an unlawfully detained American. So is American Paul Whelan, who has been held for more than 5 years on what the U.S. says are fictitious spying charges. Nigeria's military will release more than 300 people it detained who were suspected of being part of the Boko Haram terrorist group. NPR's Emmanuel Akinwotu reports a Nigerian court ruled there was no credible evidence they committed any crimes.
The Nigerian military will not say how long the 313 released prisoners have been held. but thousands have been arrested and many held without trial since the Islamist terror group launched its insurgency in the northeast of the country in 2009. The army has run an amnesty and rehabilitation program for terrorists and have freed more than 600 in the last year. But those releases have also caused tensions when those arrested return to their communities, as the impact of the insurgency still weighs heavily on the region. Nigeria's military operations have diminished Boko Haram, but it remains active. Last month, its militants kidnapped over 200 women and children. Emmanuel Akimotu, NPR News, Lagos.
The U.S. Mint is releasing a new quarter. It features the likeness of late Hawaii Congresswoman Patsy Mink. She drafted Title IX. The law bans sex discrimination at educational institutions. Mink was the first woman of color to serve in Congress. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and Dan Hoost is here, as he is most every Friday. Thank you for being here today. He's the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, here to tell us about what's happening in Monticello.
My pleasure to be here as always, Tim, and happy spring and Easter to you, because we're at that moment in time.
It's feeling like it's almost there.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little brisk, but yep. It's that spring brisk. And we're going out. Are we going out like a lion, do we think, or a lamb? I didn't look at the weather forecast. We'll do that.
It was very windy this morning.
Yeah.
But I think we're sort of going out like a lamb. We certainly came in like a lion in March. I remember that.
It was certainly a lammy winter.
Yeah. Lammy winter.
Ooh, I'm going to coin that phrase.
Yes.
All right.
It was a lammy winter. That's sort of like sometimes how people read our email addresses. You know, it's at sullivanny.us. There's no dot between Sullivan and NY. So people say at sullivanny.us. So a lammy winter in Sullivanny.
Yeah, well, there we go. Wow. It's windy in here, too. Let's start out with some stuff that's going on. Starting Monday, the litter pluck, the big chance to clean up. The area litter pluck starts Monday.
Yes. You know what? I litter pluck all year long.
Yeah.
So what's starting Monday, hopefully you've been doing it, especially since we had somewhat of a snowless winter. So we've seen the trash instead of it been buried under piles of snow. But what starts Monday is that we start accepting it at all of the Sullivan County transfer stations for free. You just need to have coupons. We have the coupons right there at the transfer station if you want to pick them up while you're there. But it won't require one of those little tickets or a permit or paying for anything to dump any bags of litter that you've picked up alongside the road or any public trails in Sullivan County. Now, we don't go looking through your bags of trash to see, is this really litter pluck? Or are you throwing away something from your own household waste? It's the honor system. We hope and expect people, and we've found folks to be this way, that they will give us the correct bags that they claim for free versus the ones that they need to pay for. But this is our way of saying, hey, spring is here. Let's get ourselves cleaned up. The thing I love about it, though, is that it goes beyond spring. It goes into summer. It goes into fall.
It goes to October.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It goes to October 31st, which you can dump these bags for free in our transfer stations. You just need those coupons. And not only are they available at our transfer stations, you can also get them at your local town or village hall. We've distributed them out there. And you can also get them at our Parks, Recreation, and Beautification office in the Government Center in Monticello. A lot of people don't realize that our parks office has the word beautification actually in its formal title, because that's part of what they're doing. And it makes sense. Our parks, we want them to be attractive. And to stay attractive, they need to be kept clear of litter.
And as much as we've educated folks about don't litter and keeping our area beautiful, it's still some litter to be found, unfortunately.
Yes.
So we need to pluck it and take it to the transfer station.
In front of my house, usually, I find it's a mix. It's things that looks like younger folks maybe have thrown out their window as their, either Red Bull or something alcoholic or whatever that's alongside the road. Or it's folks who are actually taking their trash to the dump and they just didn't quite seal that bag up enough, and it's in the back of their pickup or something else, and a piece of it flies out. So I'd like to just remind everybody out there, when you bring that litter to the transfer stations, make sure that that bag is tightly closed, because otherwise you start becoming a litter bug yourself.
Then there's more plucking.
Yes.
Let's talk about the fish restocking program as well. I don't know if a lot of folks know about this program. The county offers a restocking program for our aquatic friends.
Yep. It's the Sullivan County Soil and Water Conservation District, which is a quasi-independent agency. We fund them. The county legislature funds them every year. And they do quite a few interesting things. Soil and water conservation also means that they're a great resource. If you have questions about soil or water issues, they are a go-to place. They're actually located at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Liberty. You can visit them in person or give them a call at 292-6552. They're a great resource for anything soil and water related, but this latest thing is the fish stocking program, which they do every year. It's their spring fish stocking program. You can stock your pond with bass, minnows, sunfish, catfish, or grass carp, which I never even heard of grass carp, but I assume that's a really good fish to have. It probably eats the grass in the pond and maybe helps keep it free of weeds that will otherwise choke it up. But you can go ahead and contact the Soil and Water Conservation District and request an order form to be mailed to you, or you can go online and fill out one at Sullivan SWCD, that stands for Soil and Water Conservation District, SullivanSWCD.org, and they'll accept orders until Monday, June 10th to get these fish.
Yeah, they're saying also on the website they have a new fish supplier and a larger variety of fish. So maybe that's where that grass carp come from. Yeah. Then the order form, again, these are you order them. It's not free, but it is a fairly decent looking cost, I guess. I'm not in the fish market, so to speak, in terms of like what does it cost. But
you didn't buy a grass carp?
I did not buy my grass carp. But there's still time until June 10th, apparently.
Right.
I've got some people on birthday lists that might be getting.
Well, my understanding, because I own some property upstate that has a pond that we stocked decades ago with bass, they're still there. So it's a great investment. If it's a healthy pond, they're going to live and reproduce for years and years to come.
Yep, that is at SullivanSWCD.org. Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dan Hoost, the communications director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. Let's talk about that burn ban, reminding folks that that burn ban went into effect earlier this month and stays in effect through May. Important to remember that this is that time of year where we don't want folks out there burning stuff on their property, because that could lead to bad things.
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing that spring cleaning, and we're like, I don't need this, I don't want this, and maybe you don't want to go to the dump and have to throw it away and be charged to throw it away. But if you're going to use that, even in a burn barrel or some sort of pile that you think, oh, it's safe, it'll be a small fire, whatever. I've been there, done that. When I was a teenager, I burned something in a burn barrel during the burn ban season, and a spark got out and went over into the field next to my family's house. It was full of dry grass, and that stuff combusted like crazy. It just was like somebody was just blowing wind on it or spraying gas on it or something. It just spread all over the place, and I remember thinking in horror, I'm going to burn my house down.
Yeah.
And no one should have to worry about that. Not only you, but also your neighbors and your friends. This is something that is very serious, and just because you think, oh, I've done it before, nothing bad has happened, doesn't mean this year something bad won't happen. That vegetation is still very dry, even though the ground seems sopping wet. We continue to get plenty of precipitation. Thank goodness we don't look like we're going to have a drought this summer. But that said, the vegetation yet has not started, you know, growing, and the sap is starting to flow in certain trees and bushes, but not everything. They're really drier than they look. So please don't create an issue for yourself, your neighbors, or the fire department. They have enough to do.
Well, especially with this mild winter that we had, more dormant vegetation exposed across much of the state. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation is warning against these increased wildfire risks and have already said that some early fires in multiple counties have been reported, largely due to debris burning spreading to these grassy and wooded areas.
So, including Sullivan.
Including Sullivan. So, again, let's make sure folks adhere to the burn ban. Residential brush burning in New York, burn ban in effect through May 14th. Again, this ban was instituted in 2009 to reduce the risk of these wildfire fires and protect communities, especially during these elevated times of potential wildfire and burn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on to another environmental aspect of some of the news you want to bring us. The ag district applications being accepted in April. Let's remind folks what these ag districts are in the area and what you're applying for.
Yeah, this is sort of like that fish stocking program. It's something that flies a little bit under the radar, but it's a great program and a very important program. We're accepting at the county, this is at the county, not the Soil and Water Conservation District. This is through our planning division. We're accepting applications from property owners seeking to be included in what are known as New York State Agricultural Districts 1 and 4. Those are located in Sullivan County. We do this with Cornell Cooperative Extension. Ag districts are, as the state explains, some geographic areas that consist predominantly of viable agricultural land, just what you think they would be. Agricultural operations within those districts are afforded benefits and protections to promote the continuation of farming and the preservation of that agricultural land. Benefits include protection of farm operations from unreasonably restrictive local laws, limitations on assessments for newly formed benefit districts, and notification to local governments of projects that could adversely affect that farmland. So if you like seeing that open space, if you own some of that open space and have used or are using it for agricultural purposes, and you have yet to explore putting it into an ag district, the person to call is the great employee we share with Cornell Cooperative Extension, Melinda Medaw. She can be reached at 845-292-6180. That's 292-6180. Her extension's 116, but just call 292-6180 and hit 0. They'll connect you to her. She can answer questions about it. We are accepting those applications starting Monday, running through April 30th, so for the entire month of April. Applications then, and it doesn't cost you anything other than I think there might be an application fee, but other than that, it's not. Applications will be reviewed by the Sullivan County Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board, who then make recommendations to our own county legislature regarding property to be added to the districts this year. Usually that just goes through in a formal process. There's no real issue that happens there. Most of the time neighbors are like, yes, please include that in the ag district. The county legislature holds a public hearing that votes on the approval of each recommended addition, and then it goes to the state, which the state just rubber stamps whatever the county has said that they want to do, because they expect that we have gone through the proper processes. A lot of times, too, Melinda or somebody will go out and take a look at the ag properties as well, but we're always excited to add properties to these districts because they're in areas that aren't ripe for a business development anyway, and otherwise might have housing development that could contribute to sprawl in the area. So it helps maintain a good balance between areas that we want to develop and areas, we certainly need more housing where you can use more businesses, but also areas that we need to focus on the agricultural, whether it's for-profit or non-profit agricultural, because ag is a big business itself. Yeah. But also maybe it's just that property that you want to see in as long as possible continuing to be used for ag purposes.
What are some of the benefits that the folks who are in these districts are afforded, and what are some of the protections as well to promote the farming and preservation of the land?
For example, if something was to happen in close proximity to that there was something proposed, everything from a solar array to a housing development to a warehouse or something, you would be notified right away about that and have a chance to weigh in on it. And that what you as a property owner in an ag district would have to say would, in some respects, weigh very heavily upon, legally speaking, upon the town planning and zoning boards. They have to take that into consideration. There's usually, not specifically from the ag district, but it can help contribute towards the evidence you give to get a tax break on certain ag properties. So I have property upstate that's in an ag district and is actively used by a farmer. I don't charge the farmer anything. He uses it just to have hay, and we get a 25% reduction in our property tax on that property because of it. And it's to our benefit to be in the ag district. It's a separate application process for that tax break, but it adds to the evidence that we can provide to the state. This is an actively farmed property, because that's what they want to see. They don't want to just see somebody, you know, trying to put something in an ag district that is just land that they want to preserve as a forest, for example. That's a different, that would be like a conservation easement or something like that.
They're different.
The ag district though needs to be currently or in, like some fields are in rotation, crop rotation. So maybe a field is fallow at the moment, you know, it's dormant. But if it's going to continue to be used for agriculture, that's something that we are interested in seeing if we can put it in an ag district if you are.
Well, not only beneficial to the property owner for these tax breaks and other benefits, but then beneficial to everybody in the area to preserve that rural nature of the area that that we're in.
Yeah, and if you are looking, if you're coming to the area and you're looking for a home in the area and you want it to be maybe next to an open field that you'd like to see stay an open field, take a look at these ag districts and you might find a property right next door, and that actually can increase the value of that property if somebody's trying to sell that because of its location next to an ag district or in an ag district.
Right, yeah. Don't have to worry about a high rise going up next to you.
Yeah. That's realistic.
Pretty realistic, no matter what. We're going to take a quick break and we'll continue with more of our Friday conversation with Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. Trout season is kicking off in Trout Town, USA. The first cast at the Junction Pool in Roscoe is April 1st. The 63rd Annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner, April 6th at Rockland House, featuring live local music, dancing, awards, speakers, a raffle, and a silent auction. And throughout the Two-Headed Trout Weekend, April 5th, 6th, and 7th, Roscoe businesses have trout-themed events and promotions. More information at RoscoeNY.com. Paid for by the Roscoe-Rockland Chamber of Commerce.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, joined in the studio live with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. We're talking about some of the stuff that's news out of Monticello. We've got a couple of surveys. One is a survey of landlords. What is this survey all about? What's the purpose of that?
Yeah, this is interesting. We did it, I think, for the first time last year, at least the first time online last year. We were doing it through SurveyMonkey. We have a QR code available on our website and on our social media to connect landlords to a survey that we use to guide the county and specifically our Department of Social Services, which works with landlords to place people in housing. We want to enhance our processes and our services for how we deal and interact with those building owners and the managers. So anyone who's a landlord or is a manager of a rental property, we would love to hear from. If you're interested in working with the county, we want to know about how you think of your rental property, how big it is, who it caters to, also just what you think could be improved for the interaction you have with the county. It really is meant to streamline the process, smooth out issues as much as possible, because our Department of Social Services depends upon our landlords greatly, especially in this area of shrinking availability of affordable housing. We want to work with them more than ever before. We want to be sure that the properties that they're offering to house our folks in need in are up to code and are safe and healthy places for them. But we also want to make sure that the landlords feel like they aren't constantly hitting their head against a wall when they're dealing with us or the state. You know, bureaucracy can be bureaucratic and full of paperwork, and we want to streamline that process as much as possible. So this survey, which I think we're going to continue offering annually, is extremely valuable to us. Anyone who answers is going to have every answer scrutinized by our staff, because it's not like we've got hundreds of landlords ready, willing, and waiting in Sullivan County to rent their properties to our folks who are low income or very vulnerable. So I think last year we only got maybe about a dozen responses. We'd love to have more, but what I'm saying about that is because it was only about a dozen responses, you can be very assured that every single answer that those people filled out was looked at very closely and considered very deeply by our staff, because they had the time to look at that and they had the deep interest, because this is a small pool of folks that we're dealing with. And like I said, they're crucial to our operations.
Well, you mentioned 12, about a dozen respondents last time. I mean, what's the pool size that you're estimate of the number?
I'm sort of guessing in the dark here, but I would say based upon that, let's say I think somebody told me the other day that was about a 50% response rate.
Okay.
So we're talking about maybe two dozen landlords in the area, because most folks are either aiming for middle class or affluent crowd, Airbnb, that kind of thing, short-term rentals, or if they're doing long-term rentals, they might be doing it in areas outside of like Liberty and Monticello, where they don't want to go through all the paperwork that you would have to go through with us. And so they're renting to people who actually can afford or are trying to afford the rent, as opposed to those that we are helping supplement their rental payments.
So what do you do with the information?
Well, of course, we blast it all. No. We don't sell it. We don't do anything.
No,
we,
but I mean,
we
you use it. Increase communication, which is what the point of it is. But then what's being done with that, especially in trying to solve some of this housing crisis that we've been talking about, and some of the just issues inherent with the property owners themselves that are, I'm going to rent here instead of here.
Well, the one required question in the survey is name and contact information. And we, if we haven't been in contact with this person before, if this is a new name to us, you can be very assured that we are going to be calling them as soon as we get this, just to make that relationship. If it's with someone we have an existing relationship, then we take a look at what it is that they're saying, the kinds of answers that they're giving to us. What can we improve? And we talk to them usually one-on-one, is my understanding, about what they have to say. Now, if the whole group is saying you need to improve this, well, then we know we need to improve something. If one or two people, though, is saying, can we work on this part? I'm quite sure our staff will be reaching out to those landlords and saying, okay, well, maybe we can't do exactly what you would like us to be doing, but here's an alternative, or here's how we can make things easier for you. Because we literally cannot afford to lose any landlords at this point, not with two dozen landlords and the amount of folks that we have to place in either emergency or longer term housing. We need to make sure that we have good relationships with these landlords. And this survey is a way to ensure that.
As you mentioned on the website here, the information collected in the survey will not be shared with other entities, and that the contact information is just being requested to get that additional information in a one-on-one relationship. And this relationship building ideally will not only improve, I suppose, the landlord's experience with the county, but also the county's experience with the landlord, in hopes that it might pave the way for some solutions to our housing crisis?
Hopefully. Okay. And also, it will hopefully improve the tenant-landlord relationship, because sometimes we're the mediator between a tenant-landlord dispute, because it's our tenant that we have put in there. And we want to make sure that landlords and tenants, as much as possible, get along and treat each other with respect and care, because, of course, you know, you've heard the horror stories about landlords. You've heard the horror stories about tenants with issues. It can be a very rocky relationship. Well, if we're involved, we're involved up to the neck in it all. And it behooves us as well to make sure that those landlord-tenant relationships are as ideal as possible.
Survey deadline for responses is at close of business April 24th. I guess I'm poking around this a little bit just because it involves the housing crisis.
Yes.
I know that this is part of building that relationship. It may not be the solution, but it is a part of this other larger piece of the puzzle.
Oh, definitely. Listen, even if we had a great affordable housing market in Sullivan County, we would still need to place people in emergency housing. These landlords are crucial. We appreciate working with them as long as they're following the rules and the laws, and we want to make that process as easy and as pleasant for them as possible.
Another survey. We talked about this. It's out now, the broadband map survey. Let's explain to folks again what this is all about.
Yeah, this is really interesting. A couple of years ago, we had worked with the state on the first part of this survey to get from folks whether or not they felt like they were served, unserved, or underserved with broadband internet access in their community. Well, the state took all that data and plotted probably across the state millions of points, but in Sullivan County, tens of thousands of points that are locations, service locations on a map of Sullivan County. That map is available for the public to review up until, I believe, it's April 11th. And what the state wants to do is see if there's anything that they missed, because there are dots on there that are white, which means it's a served location. It's got broadband internet service. There are dots that I think are blue, meaning it's underserved, and red that is unserved. I think I got the color combination correct there.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map now. Well, there's a few red dots on there.
Yep. However, that's a good thing insofar as if you click on that,
it gives you an address.
Your property,
yeah.
And it'll tell you, oh, you're already in the database as being unserved or underserved or whatever the red. Because I've had some people ask me, well, my property is listed as red. I mean, that's not good. I want to let the state know. No, actually, that means the state already does know that that is unserved property. The state has almost $700 million in funding from the federal government to improve broadband access. And the state is very serious about getting broadband internet access to everybody in New York State. Everybody. They're aiming for 100% as much as possible. I suppose if you live on top of an Adirondack mountain someplace, maybe you're out of luck, although actually you probably have satellite service there. But we have a fair amount of folks in Sullivan County who don't have service. The thing that is more interesting here is if you are that white dot that says that you're served, but you know that you actually are not served, that you don't have service, that's where we need to let the state know that you don't actually have service or you're underserved. And we're going to put all that information together with the help of the public and submit it to the state and say, listen, we need some of that $664 million. We need a portion of that here in Sullivan County to solve these issues. I will say we're already working on providing broadband internet access to as many people in the county as possible. We're working with a company called Archtop. It's a private-public relationship. Archtop basically has all the permissions they need now, except some pole permissions from the utility companies to start stringing fiber cable around Sullivan County. So we hope in another year or so that that will be a reality. And they're also going to be stringing fiber to our emergency communication towers, where we'll be able to broadcast a wireless broadband signal so that people can actually have boxes, basically, that can pick up that signal installed in their home. So that if you're living down one of those dirt or dead-end roads that no cable company's ever going to spend money stringing cable down, that we can still get broadband internet access to you. I was told actually just yesterday by somebody who lives down one of those roads, they're just a half mile from the cable pole, and the cable company told them $36,000 and we'll get you set up.
Yeah, I had that experience.
Yes.
In the past.
So
that's, yeah. So, I mean, having this experience in the past, we have all been, had the frustration of broadband for several years, knowing that there's this giant pot of money, and we're still kind of waiting in certain areas. But this is part of the process, I suppose.
Unfortunately, government takes very long to do these things, but I do know this money is in New York's hands, and this is the final part of it. They have the April 11th deadline and then an April 18th deadline for those of us in government to finish this, and they intend, I think, to start distributing this money later this year or early next. And that money will have to be put right to use. So we are looking to get a chunk of it because we know we have unserved and underserved areas in Sullivan County, as that map already shows in part.
Found my dot.
Yep.
I mean, I've got service. I'm served.
And you're not. You
no,
said
no,
before,
I am. It's white. It
means but in reality, are you served?
Yes.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, that's good.
Okay, good.
I'm seeing as I pull out, I see a few red dots in the surrounding area. So,
But those red dots, again, mean that we already know now that you're unserved or underserved. So that's a good thing. The thing, like I said before, is if you're a white dot when you shouldn't be a white dot, meaning that the map is showing that you're served when you really aren't served. That's the kind of accuracy level we're trying to get to where, okay, you need to tell us, no, I'm not served. I'm unserved or underserved.
Do you know when I found out we had service was during COVID when we were all sort of like hunkered down. I was just going back and forth to the radio station. That was it, like in, out, not yeah. anywhere else. And one day I took the dog for a walk in a different direction. And I was like, what's all this cabling? Like, apparently it had been going on yep. for months and I had no idea because I wasn't there during the day because I was here. And mm-hmm. then when I get home, they're gone. And then I'm like, wait a minute. So, yeah, check for cable in your area as well if you haven't looked recently. One yes. other thing to talk about before we get going is early voting. That is going on now through primary day, which is, yes, April 2nd, Tuesday. All polls open 6 to 9. When can folks do early voting between now and then what's going on the day?
Yeah, right now, actually, we have early voting going on in our government center in Monticello and also at our public health building on Community Lane in Liberty. It's part of our social services complex. We actually will finish up that early voting period tomorrow. It's going to be running, today it runs from, what's today, the 29th, right? Mm-hmm. So from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. today, and then tomorrow the 30th, it'll be 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at those two locations. Then Sunday, which is Easter, and then Monday, we don't have any early voting going on. If you don't come today or tomorrow, then you'll actually be voting in your usual polling spot Tuesday, anytime between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. And we have a list on our website under the Board of Elections of all the polling locations. You should have already gotten in past elections a card in the mail telling you what your polling location is. But if you're not sure where you're supposed to go vote on Tuesday, just give our Board of Elections a call. They can look it up very quickly for you. 845-807-0400. That's 807-0400. They will help you right over the phone.
And just a reminder, in New York, it's primary day, April 2nd, presidential primary. The primary for Pennsylvania later in April, April 23rd, which includes more races. But here in New York, just that presidential primary. The other right. primary for New York coming up in June.
Yes.
As is typical. We'll have more about that information. But again, early voting today, tomorrow, not on Sunday or Monday. And then, of course, the primary day on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, all the usual polling areas open.
Check with your local Board of Elections for mm-hmm. more information. Mm-hmm. And one more thing, the food scrap recycling pilot program. I don't think we've mentioned this for a couple of weeks now. It yes. was something we had been talking about a lot. We took our pedal off the gas, our foot off the pedal of the gas here. But now want to find out where we are. Maybe we need to push a little bit more to get to that goal. Where
we do. We? Yeah, we should have mentioned it more because we only ticked up a little bit. We're still just over the 300 mark. I think we have 310 signups, okay. which is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But we need to hit that 400 mark of people who sign up for this. Again, for those who are unfamiliar with this, this is a way to compost if you don't want to compost at home. We will take those food scraps from you for free at most of our transfer stations. I think only Western Sullivan and Coshecton we won't take it, but we'll take it at all the other transfer stations. And we take that in. We ship it off to Ulster County that has a composting facility, and it turns into this very valuable and useful compost that can be put in gardens and helps wonderful things grow. We are looking to get to that 400 sign-up mark so that we can turn around to the state and say, see, There's interest here in Sullivan County. Give us permission to build our own composting facility so that we can actually keep it here in Monticello and not give away our valuable compost gold to Ulster County.
Because otherwise we're giving it away.
Yeah. Yeah, and they make money off of it. So we want to do that here. Listen, if you're already composting in your own backyard, keep that up. Do that. That's a wonderful thing. But if you're like me, you're just too lazy to do that, or you don't have enough property to do that, we will get you signed up for this. We'll give you bins that you can use to bring your raw food scraps to our transfer stations. All you need to do is contact our recycling coordinator, Cassie Thelman. She is wonderful. She actually was one of our election inspectors also in this election. She is just one of those great people that you want to get to know. 845-807-0291. That's 807-0291. Talk to Cassie. She'll get all your information and she'll ship those bins out to you and teach you how to use them. And then you'll be part of what we hope is a real transformative initiative.
Well, and also if you're not composting and you're not part of this program and you're just putting your food scraps into the trash, that's causing what?
you're contributing to greenhouse gas emissions because that will eventually decompose in a landfill, creating methane gas that has to be burned off through flares in landfills. So we still have that. It's going away in our current landfill, but right now there's methane there. Some of it we recapture and some of it we have to burn off.
So let's get to that number up on the food scrap recycling program. Call Cassie Thelman.
Yes, 807-0291.
All right. Dan Hoost, Communication Director for Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday with an update from Monticello and more. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Liberty is the home to Sullivan County's first and only all-girl scout troop. Not a Girl Scout troop. We'll explain right after this break. This is Radio Chatskill.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. This leaves most counties with little or no access to local news and information, and even more are at risk of losing their last local news source. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to this station.
Support the news and information you rely on. Donate now at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations, from Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Did you know Liberty is the home to Sullivan County's first and only all-girls scout troop? It was originally an all-boys troop and has been around for over a century. But in 2019, everything changed. With the official transition of the Boy Scouts of America to Scouts BSA, doors swung open for girls to join in scouting in America. But why the switch and what compelled them to make this historic change? Today, Radio Catskills' Laying Tang speaks to the scouts and the dedicated leaders of Troop 1095 in Liberty.
Hey there, I'm Laying. Today, we are diving into the inspiring journey of Troop 1095, right here in Liberty, New York. So, first of all, who is Troop 1095?
What happened was Troop 95 itself has been in our area for just over 100 years. It started back in 1911, so just a year after the Boy Scouts of America was incorporated in the United States.
This is Nancy Esposito. She is the Scout Adult Leader in Sullivan County. She has been on the committee to help local scouts with the Eagle Scout process for close to 25 years.
you know, within the last couple years or so, the membership in the troop at that time was just boys and was dwindling a bit. And then in 2019, Boy Scouts of America opened up membership to females. So at that time, it seemed a right fit to switch over from an all-male troop to a female troop now that the girls could join. The age range is 11 to 17. And then when you become 18, whether you've made Eagle Scout or not, that's the age limit.
What's the main goal or mission of the women troop?
I think a big part of what we try to do is be a part of the community and let our community know that we're here to help out, like the Memorial Day Parade in Liberty and honoring our veterans at Veterans Day and remembering the sacrifice they've made and making sure to respect them. So a lot of what we do in scouting is helping them learn about their community, the nation and the world as well, but a good focus, at least on our local, what can we help our neighbors with?
Now, Troop 1095 has six girls. Among them, the oldest is Elena Ramirez. She's 17 years old, and she is the senior patrol leader in the troop. I spoke with her about how she came up with the idea to become a woman scout.
My older brother was a scout in the troop, and once he eagled, and it was like two more boys after him that eagled from that troop, the troop was unfortunately going to fold because we didn't have enough boys. And then BSA came out and said, hey, we're accepting girls. And I was like, hey, mom, I think it would be pretty cool if me and two of my friends got together and started this troop. It was February of 2019. And we were like, we're doing it. We're opening the first girls troop. And we did it. I am the sole survivor of the original three. But I thought it would just be a fun little thing to get to experience the same things that my brother got to experience, because I remember he would come home from camp raving about his experiences and like, oh, I met this person and this one and this one, and they were all from all different parts of the world. And I thought it would be cool.
This spring, Elena will become the first woman Eagle Scout in the history of Sullivan County. Eagle Scout is the highest scout rank in the Scouts BSA program of the Boy Scouts of America. Since it started back in 1911, only about 4% scouts have managed to earn this rank after going through a pretty long review process. I asked Nancy if the requirements are different for girls. She said,
the program itself hasn't changed at all. No requirements were changed when the membership was opened up to girls. So the same requirements are out there that are for boys or for girls.
And Elena did it.
So I definitely busted my butt to get all my merit badges done, because you need, I believe it's 21 or 22. So it was a struggle. Lots of fights with my mother, but they were all in good measures, because it was definitely her just trying to push me to do my best, because she knew that I could accomplish it. You'd have a schedule and you'd follow your schedule, and at the end of the week, you would complete the merit badges.
Merit badges. This is the most frequent word mentioned by the girls in the troop. One badge represents one mission. The girls need to do the mission correctly, get it signed off, and acquire their badges.
There's separate requirements for each merit badge. For example, the archery one, I keep mentioning it. It requires you to first of all know how to shoot a bow, and it has you do proper legal requirements on if hunting with arrows and bows and other things like that, and then practical on how to use it. But it's different for every merit badge.
This is Agnes Potter. She is a librarian in Troop 1095.
One of the personal challenges I did was just the first aid merit badge. It's just a lot of medical procedures with demonstrating, explaining. If you're doing the CPR section of it, you have a CPR dummy and you learn how to use an AED and how to do most basic life support. I think it was just because of the time. It took me a few months to complete, and I really had to try to memorize all of the first aid things that I had to go. But I think time is one of the biggest components of why it was difficult.
As the girls grow older, the mission will progressively become more challenging.
Like, the longest one that I had to do was personal management, and that's working on finances and stuff. So that one, I waited until I was older and I had a job so I could use my income accordingly and keep my budget and whatnot.
The badges are not just challenges. There are also opportunities for girls to bond, have fun together, and create shared memories.
We've done a couple of camporees and camping trips, and sometimes it's not even like something extravagant that's like the best thing. Sometimes it's a simple little weekend camping trip that we all get to hang out and spend time together and joke around, work on merit badges and advancements, and just kind of sit around the fire, talk, play some cards, you know, just spend time with each other.
Additionally, the girls gained valuable experiences outside of campus settings. They experience personal growth and develop skills to contribute their community. Sophia Ferguson is the assistant senior patrol leader in the troop. At first, she was introverted, but now she's really come out of her shell and become great at communicating.
It's really the social skills, they really pay off. I work at a scouting summer camp, so it's very important that you know what you're doing when you're a staff. You want to make it the best summer as possible for the campers. So I have to use those skills every day over the summer. Scouting places a really big emphasis on communication and public speaking. You can't be afraid of everyone. And there's a lot of communication inside the troop, but also outside of it. At any event that you go to with our council, you meet new people and you have to talk to adults. And it just really eases the anxiety when it comes to speaking to people.
And more importantly, the missions help the girls pay attention to the community issues that have been overlooked, and they are making efforts to improve them little by little during their troop activities.
I think that Sullivan County has a littering problem, and I think that it's something that people are so used to that they just ignore it. But as a troop, we try to do annual litter plucks just because it's such a big problem. And even though it doesn't always affect our troop directly, it's just really important to keep nature in general safe and to protect our environment.
This year, Alina will leave the troop with the skills she acquired during her time there. The experiences in the troop has helped her figure out what she might want to do in the near future.
A lot of the skills I learned in scouting I use in my job now, because during the summer I'm a camp counselor, so I'm outdoors all day, I'm working with kids. It taught me to be compassionate and be caring and just kind of listen to what another person needs and just be that kind of support for them. Seeing like the difference I can make in a person's life or seeing how helpful I can be, it kind of made me feel good. So I chose to go into social work. That's actually how I chose my career path for once I go off to college next year.
You have been in the troop for 5 years. What's your feeling of leaving the troop after turning 18?
A little sad, because I definitely will miss the friendships and the being able to have all the stuff to do and being able to spend time with the friends that I've made, but kind of excited to see where the troop is going to go now that I'm on the outside looking in instead of living in the moment.
The old leaves and the young join in. Recently, the troop has started a fresh round of recruitment.
Anybody can join Scouts at any time. So it's a year-round program. So there is a website. It's beascout.org. And anybody, you can go on that and you put your zip code in. That's the best way to find one in your area, since we have girls throughout the county. And if there's any other girls that are younger, their parents can find information on Cub Scout PACs, which are for younger kids, kindergarten through fifth grade. And we also love adults who would like to help out. We welcome community members to apply to be merit badge counselors and help out, and to just realize that the Scouts are out there, the boys, the girls, Cub Scouts, older Scouts, we're still active and we're still in the area. And when you see them out there at an event or a fundraiser, give them some support and some love and let them know you appreciate what they do for the community and spread the word.
In Liberty, I'm Laying Town for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Whether you're a painter, sculptor, writer, or any other creator, repetitive motions can strain both your body and your mind. As part of the fifth installment of Delaware Valley Arts Alliance's Salon Series, fiber artist and certified yoga instructor Liza Laird is presenting a special chair yoga for artists. It's a session tomorrow, and Laird will be accompanied by Steve Warner on the handpan, a steel instrument with 9 notes. Here's culture reporter Valerie Manzi with more on chair yoga for artists.
Good morning, Liza, and welcome to Radio Chatskill here at WJFF.
Good morning.
So, Liza, you have a very interesting event coming up this weekend, this Saturday, March 30th at 2 p.m. at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, New York, entitled Yoga for Artists. Can you explain Yoga for Artists to us?
Sure. So I'm the author of a book called Yoga of Yarn, A Knitter's Handbook for Self-Discovery. And this class is a mini version of what the book covers, which is how yoga movement, meditation, and breathing techniques can really spark creativity. It's not only about moving the body for keeping it healthy so that you can continue to paint, sculpt, or knit for hours, but it's about creating and sparking joy from within, getting the blood flowing, and really connecting the mind, body, and spirit.
And how long have you been conducting these workshops?
I've been doing it for about 15 years now. I started my first yoga and yarn retreat back in 2009, I believe, was my first one. And I've been a longtime knitter and a longtime yoga teacher, and the two of them are just completely synced in my day-to-day life, and I've found that my students also really greatly benefit from combining the yoga philosophy movements with their creating, with their knitting or whatever craft or art that they love to do. Generally, it tends towards fiber artists, simply because I call it Yoga of Yarn, my retreats. But the workshops have included painters and sculptors and ceramic artists as well. Quite a range. And writers.
Do you have a website you would like to share with our listeners?
Sure. It's yogaofyarn.com. And on there, you can learn more about my book, Yoga of Yarn, and also some events that I'm doing, like the event at the DVAA. But I'm also lead annual yoga and yarn retreats where we go away for about 3 or 4 days, and there's lots of yoga and creating throughout the weekend.
And where do you go on these retreats?
My regular retreat every year is in Vermont, in Plymouth, Vermont, at a retreat center called Good Common, and it's absolutely delicious food. We do local farm visits, and we knit, and we do yoga, and it's a great time. And then next year, I'm going to have my first Catskills retreat at the Hemlock Never Sink, which I'm very excited about, to do something close to home, because in the past we did Vermont and Texas in Marfa, Texas, which is a great artist community, but we're trying out the Catskills next year.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And a little more about the event on Saturday. I see that you have a pan drummer with you at that event.
Yeah, yep. I'm very excited about that. It will be the movement will be accompanied by a hand pan drummer, Steve Werner. So it'll be an eclectic and interactive event where we'll try different movements, meditation, some breath work, but we also will be able to listen to the beautiful music on the handpan.
Will folks be doing art while they're there, or this is to get them in the groove, so to speak?
More get them in the groove, really kind of to spark creativity and ignite some ideas and just get the body and the mind moving. But we're, you know, there might be some yarn involved, but we're not going to be creating anything at that moment.
Liza, thank you so much for sharing this with us today. And anything you'd like to add?
No, I'm just really excited and can't wait to do some yoga with artists this weekend. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
That's culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to yoga teacher and fiber artist Liza Laird about the chair yoga artist session tomorrow at DVAA. More information about that at Delaware Valley Arts Alliance.org. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. On Monday, it's the first day of trout season, and we'll speak with local angler and legend Judy Van Putt right after her first cast. That's Monday, April 1st, first official day of trout season, on Radio Catskill. A reminder, you can hear this show and all of our local programming and stream everything on Radio Catskill live at wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Cassie of Rare Pair Radio. It's a weekly showcase of primarily female artists, but also a wide range of avant-garde musicians, the fruit of post-punk, experimental, and fringe music.
Your eyes are set on stars. I love to see you shine, cause you really blow my mind.
Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233 AH Monticello, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, partly sunny and windy, with wind gusts up to 20 miles an hour, a high of 45. Cloudy, breezy tonight, low 28. And it looks like it'll be a breezy for the weekend, too. Tomorrow, 50s the high, low of 36 with some clouds, 48 cloudy on Sunday, again, breezy this weekend. Coming up next, it's On Point. It's 11 o'clock.